Naturecast. Hello, and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show, featuring Jason Zook. In uncertain times, we must change our focus and priorities. This show will highlight social justice issues with the goal of expanding minds and increasing unity, love, and mutual respect for ourselves and our planet. We support the Black Lives Matter movement. Our show aspires to promote social spirituality, which simply means that by coming together, we can solve any of our problems, including the goal of bringing an end to all forms of hate, discrimination, bias, or oppression. We must protect our environment, reform our criminal justice system, and protect every citizen from police brutality. When we come together, it becomes possible to bridge the gaps that plague our society and divide us from within. We the people means everyone.
Hello and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show. This is Jason Zook. It's a great pleasure I have the opportunity to present a special guest today, Sergey Borisov. Dr. Borisov has a broad scope of professional experiences. He's an educator, a researcher, entrepreneur, and a community leader. Sergey is a native of Ukraine. He was born and raised in Pereslav, one of the oldest cities in Ukraine. Since his childhood, our guest was very interested in science and biology. This passion guided his education trajectory. Our guest attained his BS in biology, his MS in biochemistry, and in 2000, his first doctoral degree from the National University of Kyiv, one of the most prestigious universities in Ukraine. In 2001, Sergey moved to the U.S. to study in a graduate program at Moffitt Cancer Center. And in 2006, he was awarded a second doctoral degree in biomedical science from the University of South Florida. Currently, our guest is an associate professor of molecular biology. Aside from his academic duties, our guest conducts cancer drug research trials and has led two small startup biotech companies. Development of academic and cultural ties between the United States and Ukraine is a passion and focal point of Sergey's professional activities. One of the reasons I invited him on the show today. Since 2006, our guest facilitated and organized a number of U.S.-Ukrainian academic outreach programs, ranging from preschool education to mediation of intercultural conflicts. Sergey is an active member of the Tampa Bay Ukrainian community, and he's organized and led a number of fundraising and awareness events to support Ukraine's standing against its Russian invasion. It's with great pleasure I welcome Sergey to the show.
Very good. Thank you, Jason. What a great introduction. I didn't know that I did so much already.
I want to thank you for coming on. I know that sometimes things line up on our paths that we don't always have anticipation of. And one of the things I had the pleasure of coming to know you in the last few months, and I felt like we align in terms of our viewpoints about Ukraine and everything that's been going on with the mainstream media. I want us to get an opportunity for our audience to really think about Ukraine 2 years out since this war, going on year three already, since February. When did you first realize that this conflict would have such a far-reaching effect on your life as well as others in the United States and abroad?
Very good question. I would say I have three phases in this process. I became patriotic about Ukraine, and I started to see the difference between Ukraine and Russia and that tension that actually has hundreds and hundreds of years of history that I would love to talk about. It's really deep. It's not the war just started 2 years ago. It started like in 11th century, essentially. So I was in my late teens. I already was very much into history of Ukraine, and I saw the difference. And I saw the reality, how Russia controls Ukrainians' minds and politics and economy. But the actual open fight is still was more like our folkloric stories. I never thought that I would witness it in my own life. And the first big awakening was when I already was in the United States and we had Orange Revolution in Kyiv.
When was that?
It was a revolution in the capital of Ukraine when pro-Russian political forces tried to persuade our presidential election. And people just knew that they just could not tolerate anymore that type of manipulation of our lives. And people just went on streets of Kyiv and were protesting. And it was that point, and we won. We pushed out the pro-Russian president and we reinstalled Yushchenko, who was very much pro-Ukrainian. And the remarkable that revolution was very peaceful. It was beautiful. It's called Orange Revolution. It was just people were singing, and it was very much like a hippie times. And it was really showing the world, but most importantly, Ukrainians themselves, that we already raised new generations of people who are not really buying this stuff from Putin anymore. That helped for a while, but then Russia did not let it go. And we had that next revolution, which was now called Revolution of Dignity. And that was much, much more brutal. And it was much hard. And that was really awakening call for me again, because people were killed. Young people, our best students, youth who were fighting for their rights to be free and not manipulated, they were shot by Russian snipers in their hearts and necks. And it was horrible. I was crying, and I know all Ukrainians were crying. And once that revolution was over and literally country was paralyzed and watching these people, you know, in their caskets being carried through the central streets of Kyiv, hundreds of them, actually, it's a lot. That was the day when our Russian friends, so-called, invaded Crimea. Like during our funeral, they behind our backs went to Crimea with their green men, their troops, and they stole it. And honestly, when Crimea was taken away from Ukraine, I felt it was the most horrible feeling. I felt like my grandma was raped. Exactly how I could describe it. I feel like it's so wrong. It's so wrong that I don't even know how to handle this. Like, how can you in 21st century manipulate and took a land just like that? In my mind.
I'll just give you an example. That would be like for Americans to think of like Spain just parachuting their troops in for Florida and taking Florida away from the country and acting like it's exactly yours. And you'd be sitting there in utter shock, disbelief, and pain and anguish, just thinking like, how could they just define what's theirs versus ours? By sheer might? That's not right.
Personal experience, you just don't know until it happens to you, because rationally, yeah, you're like, yeah, there's so many Spanish-speaking people in Tampa Bay. Yeah, so therefore Spain must come in. So therefore I'm going to protect my Spanish speakers because they oppress here. Because that's what the prelude for that, right? But I'm like talking about different, like on the emotional level, I just was totally just threw me off. Like, I don't get it. Like, how that is even possible. Definitely, you know, February 24, that was everything just changed in one day. It was for me personally, it was really remarkable how my whole life focus is just changed, because I was like, whoa, how possible in this 21st century, when we saw into humanity and on the kind of humanistic issues like this stuff is still happening, it really affected me big deal, actually.
You know what it is? It goes to the ugly side of humanity. You have someone who's utterly evil, and that's what we could say what Putin is. He's evil, and Russia's acting evil, following his guys and invading you guys. It turned my stomach in, I think it was 2014 when they first took Crimea, and then again, now in 2022 and beyond, just seeing all the violence, and it tears at the core of who we are as human beings. Like, why would we allow this to happen and allow it to on such a scale? How old were you when you came to the United States, just in your own
life? I was 25 already.
You're 25. Okay.
Yeah.
For 25 years, you lived in Ukraine. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So your country, I mean, your home country, I'll say, because this is your country too. Your home country better than most people watching or listening to this right now. I need to ask you this, because the suffering for Ukraine goes back, as you said, to 1100s, if not before. You had the Kievan Rus, you had the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, you had a history of things that there's shared heritages amongst people in that region, but What I liked when I researched this stuff is to see that you have statehood from the beginning and that this isn't a recent construct. This is something that you guys have been fighting against Russia for hundreds of years, if not longer, correct?
Yeah.
And
I want to actually emphasize what you're saying. Yes, the word Ukrainian literally means in. So it's actually, by its concept, implies there are borders, there is a social structure, there is a community. And that is exactly what Ukraine means. And it's a very ancient word. So Ukraine as a political, like a name of a region, already appears in 12th century. I should double check on that, but those days, like really long time, you know. And Kievska Rus, Kievan Rus is where, this is where I'm from. That is Ukraine. And in all historical records, it was often, you know, referenced either or, Kievan Rus as the name of a political organization, Ukraina as the name of the land. And fortunately, that history is really bright and rich and deep. And I'm there to say, if you watch movies like The Lord of the Rings, that is the scenery of Kievska Rus. That is Ukraine, those ancient days. There is even legend, and I believe it's true, that the guy who wrote The Lord of the Rings, he watched an opera called Knyaz Igor that is basically devoted to the Kievan Rus times, history, and he got inspired by those costumes, those sceneries there, city gates, city walls, huge armies coming, and they defended. That was the life of Kievan Rus. This is where I'm from, Pereyaslav, Kiev, Chernihiv. That is the core of that land. And that was a really powerful statehood for a couple centuries until it was quenched by Mongols. And then since that time, kind of Russia started to appear on northern borders and the Russia started to dominate the area. But if I may just at least briefly, that is where the main clash happens. Ukraine is more ancient statehood than Russia, but Russia completely rewrote the history, and Russia completely deceived the world about what Russia is and what Ukraine is. And Ukrainians are trying to regain that right to be Ukrainians and not be told by Russians that we don't exist. And then everything what we are is actually Russians, and we just messed up Russians. It's almost like opposite. And the biggest statement that I want to make is actually, it is definitely fight for land, but it is the fight of ideologies. Ukrainians, so different from Russians. Russians, whatever they have, whatever regime they take, is a Tsar's Russia, or it's a Princess Russia, or it's Soviet Russia, or it's a Putin's Russia. It doesn't matter. It's not Putin's problem. It's a problem of their ideology. Very different.
I believe that there are people that are good in Russia, that they had the power to overturn the mechanism that control propaganda and control the infrastructure. You have a country like even the United States right now, we're falling backwards into these different parameters of what I would consider a backslide for our country right now with the Trump stuff. And I feel like in Russia, Putin's an autocrat. China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, these other places. One of the things I wish we could do is create an opportunity for the Russians to get rid of that government, get rid of that system. Isn't it true that you have people across the border that got along before the war, that there was an exchange of people that went back and forth, and it wasn't this villainization that Putin's created since the invasion?
Absolutely. I'll give you one example. I went to Crete, it's like a little mall area, northern Tampa, and I went with my daughter yesterday, this weekend, and there was this olive oil store, and the owner of this, she said, I just opened this 2 days ago, so I bought this oil from her just because I wanted to support, and she happened to be from Russia. And we talking, and she was almost not embarrassed to be from Russia, Russia, but she did not want to put it out. I'm from Russia. I'm from Moscow. She's like, yeah, I'm from Russia. But the bottom line that you could actually see and feel, she's just a great human being. She's just a nice, hardworking, humble, or just great human being. Yes, definitely. There are Russians that are awesome people. My dance instructor is Russian. She's great. But I, thinking about this Russian-Ukrainian thing from the standpoint of Ukraine's statehood, okay. And they are ruining it for us. They are killing us. They are messing our minds and damaging our souls and hearts with all the damage they do intentionally. By this point, I said, as a state, Russia sucks. I'm sorry, guys.
No, I agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah, we can blame.
The policies are disgusting and work.
But no, but look, it's they tolerate so much. They not say, well, their best politicians, the best journalists are gone. They're killed. They're murdered. And they allow that to happen. Like, how can you not value your best talent? How can you not value people who have hearts to lead you into a better place? Why do you let them to disappear? And it's at the point now that there is nobody there. The whole country is cleansed. So that I'm saying, yeah, Russians are you good? No, guys, you're so much behind humanity. You're so much behind. And wow. And if that would be just the case for Russia, fine. But they're damaging my country so much. So that is unacceptable. It's almost like they put that duty to take care of their own government in Ukrainians' hands. It's too much. We have our own government is corrupting over this.
What shocks me about the Russian system right now is that you have people that are in positions of power. They could be brave and take out Putin. They could be brave and take out the infrastructure that he's created that's insulated him from power. What they're doing is they're pillaging, they're raping, they're killing, and they're destroying something that is not theirs. And putting it lightly, Ukraine deserves the protection of the West and the rest of the world. And I believe that one of the reasons I wanted to interview you today is to let our audience know that just because it's not in the news as much as it used to be during the first year of the invasion, doesn't mean that this thing is gone or done or resolved. It's still raging. And we're still at a critical inroads right now where I feel like if we give enough support for Ukraine, Ukraine could overcome this. I believe very strongly in that. When you look back at the last 2 years, 2.5 years of your life, what have you found from your vantage point living here in the United States, in Florida, that could be done amongst your peers, amongst people who are here to change that outcome? What can people in our audience listening to this right now, what do you think they should do or what can they do if they're intrigued by what we're talking about and they want to try to make a difference on a personal level?
That's a great question. So what they could do really evolve with the time. So what could be done at the beginning is very different than what should be done right now. And I do want to talk about the beginning of the war and then maybe about now, because I think what is important to realize for us, and it's very hard to realize, because you think, oh, we are Americans, we live in this comfortable country, and then the other countries living probably not as good, and they probably a little bit behind. Somehow they just differ, and it's so not true. Ukrainians were just like us Americans. So busy, oh my gosh, driving kids to soccer and piano and trying to get groceries and doing their jobs and overworking and then trying to have some weekend fun. And then trying to get the most advanced iPhone for their kids. Exactly the same lifestyle. Exactly. Imagine the same lifestyle you have. You sit in traffic. You need to change oil in your car and you forgot. It's just absolutely the same. And then all of a sudden you bumped. All of a sudden you hear sirens. Imagine whatever, Tampa downtown, and there's sirens. It just doesn't go together. The civilized world and sound of a sirens, and then bombs are falling down, and then apartment buildings are bombed, right? So Ukrainians had two huge expectations when the war started. Expectation number one, that's going to be stopped. That's just not going to happen. Somehow the West, the NATO, the European Union, they're going to close the skies and the bombs not going to fly so children can go to their piano lessons. It did not happen. It was a big wake-up call for Ukrainians. It was a big wake-up call for me, looking at humanity and understanding all the backstage political and economical leverages that we have. No, they still bombed and bombs are falling on their heads. The other big expectation was that Russians would invade, they would come and they would look around and they would say, oh, this is just like normal people here. There are no Nazis. They speak Russian. Guys, let's just go home. Come on. You know what? That did not happen either. Russians came. We can talk about Bucha and Irpin. They raped. They shoot women in their legs so they could not run away. And then they raped them, right? And it was like, whatever. That's what's happening. Ukrainian learned lessons from the world. They crash. If Ukrainians are thinking, I hope they do. I know they do. They're just really depressed right now and tired. But they crashing in all the international institutions that were placed in place after the Second World War. So this would not happen again. Whoa, they failed. As clear as I'm going to say it, this all failed. My mom watches TV and she laughs. She says, look, United Nations, they came, they talked, and they went home. That's it. While our children being bombed. Okay, that's one story. So at the beginning, Ukrainians expected all of this. And even though politicians and big international organizations were like, didn't know what to do, really. That was the science we got from them. No, the world, the people poured stuff into Ukraine. It was so remarkable. Ukrainians themselves just regrouped and they become so strong and so motivated to defend their land. But then the stuff was pouring in Ukraine. One example, which is very vivid to me, that there was so much self-formed regional protection units, let's call them, self-people just came together with sticks. Not really, but something like this to protect the regions and survey, make sure Russian is not infiltrating. So there was not enough uniforms in whole country. There was actually not enough uniforms in neighboring countries because it was like massive. So we in United States here, we were raising money and we were sending 100. I myself sent 100 of a uniform comp units to Ukraine. So it's just an example. They wanted bleed stoppers and medications like this. And it was very helpful. I think those first 4 months was so critical for Ukraine to show to the world, now we're going to fight, guys. You need to adjust your expectations. It's not going to be just booms and we gone. No. So after this, definitely world's help was much more obvious, and Ukraine was regaining lands and becoming a stronger on its own feet. So now I think help is different. Now it's a shame what's going on. Capitol building, guys.
Capitol Hill.
Yeah. This is a really good illustration to the world that United States is the force of democracy, true democracy. Democracy that is not affected by political bias, democracy that not is affected by economical backstage deals and all.
There is, though. That's the reality of
what I'm being sarcastic, no, obviously.
I like to call it out for what it is. And here's the thing that shocks me, because we're about the same age. I'm 48. And one of the things I look at shock, even in my lifetime growing up in the United States since, 1975 till now, is the shift in the Republican Party. The Republican Party used to be the ones that would fight aggression and Russian aggression any way possible. But under Trump, the GOP has become the grand old Putin party. Like, there's a wing of them that support Putin more than Ukraine, and it horrifies me. And that's actually the reason why I invited you to come on today, because you talking on our own about this stuff, and I'm very passionate about it, just like you are. But sometimes people in our audience don't know how we can make a direct impact. How can we can discuss Ukraine? I could have you come on. We could feel good about it, but then we can conclude the interview. What's the lasting impact? And that's why I wanted to have you come on, because I was like, look, the universe lines us up for a reason. I got introduced to you and I found out what you do. And I'm like, I have this repetitive thing coming to me about wanting to do some type of a grassroots campaign uniting podcasters, digital creators, and influencers. And my goal is to increase content and awareness of Ukraine. And you happen to be a spokesperson for Ukraine, whether or not you realize it. You're the country spokesperson right now in Tampa on this show. But in general, I think hearts and minds are just as important as purse strings and weapons. And I want to make sure we create programming here that really makes an impact over time. From you personally, what do you feel could be done today to change the trajectory of Ukraine versus Russia? Anyone listening in the audience, what we could do, steps we can take, what would you suggest just from your own personal viewpoints? And I'm not holding you to this. You could change this later, come up with more information, but just from your own heart, when you listen.
Absolutely. What gonna change it, or what is the most important today, is the Ukrainian bill to be signed in Washington, and that help being available to Ukrainians right away. That is what's most important right now. The second, what was important, what we're trying to do here to educate the world what Ukraine is and what its mission, historical placement in European and world life. We like to, the most maybe what people can say, oh, Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. Yes, but it's also the wall between Russian destructive intentions and civilized, prosperous Europe. And Europe needs to acknowledge that and help Ukraine to accomplish that mission, because that's what its mission for centuries.
What I'll say this to you is, I believe that Ukraine will join NATO eventually. I believe that Ukraine will be a part of the EU. And I think it's going to take a while for that to happen, but I feel like this decade is going to happen. I don't think you're going to see the barbarism of Putin and Russia going in long into the future on this. I know it's a war of attrition.
Honestly, maybe yes, maybe no. I don't think Ukrainians are passionate about that anymore. I think European Union failed Ukraine because this war should not be happening in the first place. It's my opinion, and I think maybe it's a too strong of opinion for gentle European ears. Other countries that were not better in terms of their corruption and standing, they got in the European Union just like that. Ukraine did not get in European Union only because Russia was against it, only because the European Union depended on Russian oil and was scared of some sort of repercussions. This is the only reason. So it's not like humanistic reason that European Union, Ukrainians were so fed up with those double standards of Soviet Union. So they actually were really looking forward to something fresh and new. And now we see, you know, better life, definitely, but the same, a little bit of double standards everywhere. I think the biggest lesson that Ukrainians need to learn is not that they don't need to be with Russia. They don't necessarily need to be the European Union. They need to be themselves really strong, and then let European Union to beg them to join it. That's what would be my best dream. I myself, you know, European Union was cool when we have that Orange Revolution, because that was about European Union. That was good enough already. Then we have a next revolution when our students were shot in their hearts because they wanted to be part of the European Union. That European Union was good enough already for you. You know what? We already sacrificed the best. Now our country is burned and destroyed, and our hearts and souls are damaged. And now it's not good enough for the European Union. Hey, give me a break, European Union.
And I understand what you're saying. And I guess from my vantage point, looking at it from your vantage, from you personally, how has this impacted you directly? I know you have family there. I know you've here since you're 25, but how has this, I watch it on TV and I'll get emotionally affected and then I'll go for a walk, but it's not like I have family there and I don't have anyone I know personally that died there, but I can connect on an empathetic level, on a it beats me up inside watching what happens. But how is it?
This is such a great question. It's really easy and a hard question to answer. And I'm going to answer it. You will never know until it happens to your country. And I wish it never happened to anybody's country, because it's just, it feels like nothing else in your life. You cannot even describe necessarily what it feels like, except maybe say that it's like your core is violated. You feel violated, really. And I do want to repeat it, because I have friends from Croatia. I have friends from Palestine. I have friends from Syria. And they would tell me their stories. And I would be like, God, this is horrible. But it doesn't. And makes you to really understand it now when I understand it, because people would say, oh, how your family in Ukraine, all this. Of course, I worry about my family, but it's so much more than that. It's so much more than just my family is okay or not okay. Thank God they're okay. But it's more like seeing the whole community, the whole society, the whole statehood is being damaged. And it's been damaged repetitively so much, and you know it's going to take generations now to just heal from this and to move forward. And that sucks, guys, because when I travel to see these Western European countries, states, when they have preserved architectural ensembles of their downtowns, and they so comfortable, and now they have time to go and think about their spiritual growth and explore the life in a different dimension. And then they look at Eastern Europe. Oh, guys, you're really behind a little bit. We are behind because we're trying to survive. As soon as we built up more or less good society and our things started to click and work, Nazis came, or Russians came, or Polish came, or Turk. But Mongol, nobody comes all the time, guys. Can you stop coming and let us heal and have a few generations of recovery? So that's where I think the pain stems from, to knowing the history of the land, knowing the deep history, and kind of being connected to this and see, oh my gosh, again, it's damaged, it's compromised. We need to again become stronger and lose our best men and women, who's fighting best people, and they kill. You're losing the best genotypes, and then we need to recover somehow from this. In what world? So that's probably where the pain stems from. And then, of course, it's personal in terms of the way that I want to retire in Ukraine, maybe. I want to go there anytime I want. I want to see my family on a regular basis, but not when, excuse my language, Russia backs off.
Interestingly, I watched different programs about what Russia, when they occupy parts of the country on the eastern side and Crimea and all that, and it seems horrendous, I say the least, that they're trying to strip away Ukrainian identity and trying to say, you're Russian now, you don't speak Ukrainian. And they did that historically. They forbade the Ukrainian language being spoken in schools, and when it became part of the Soviet Union, all that. I couldn't imagine living in a country where external powers come in and dominate in such a way where it can be completely crippling on the psyche of the country. But I feel like Ukrainian itself, the Ukrainian people are strong enough that eventually this will subside, and Russia's not going to do away with Ukraine. I'm one of those upbeat, positive people, but I know the suffering that's going on isn't always just reported either. And I wanted to ask you, based on what your own relationships with people back in Ukraine, your family, friends, people, what's going on there right now? How are they overcoming the occupation of part of the country and then the atrocities that have been repeatedly doled out? I mean, there was a missile attack the other day and on these apartment complexes, and I become speechless talking about it because I really try to grapple it in my own head. And you can watch stuff through videos and people blow up and things. It's just, how are people dealing with that right now? Do you have an opinion about that? To think how you live in a country that's going through this, and you can only see, you're insulated so much from it when you watch it on a video. You can only see so much on a TikTok video or something on TV. What's it like really for the people there, and how are they persevering right now?
This is a great question. Don't think I have the best answer because I don't have that much of a broad connection with occupied areas, but I'm sure we can have more podcast conversations who can actually bring that to everybody's awareness. I would say maybe a few things. People who are on Ukrainian part, I think they just tolerate and life just goes on, and they used to hear the sirens in a way. I think they almost like, when I talk to my family in Ukraine, it's almost like encouraging because they're like, why are you so nervous over there? They're just trying to ignore it probably because they have no choice in a way. I know there is growing depression in people's mind because people who do think and they just see how much uncertainty and how much destruction is already done. And there is definitely a lot of a growing war trauma in society. Like one of the projects that I'm involved is to bring mental health to veterans at least. But there is, for example, there's a humongous amount of divorces in Ukraine right now because people who are coming back from the war, they're not the same, and family they left, not the same, and they don't have the same connection anymore, the same expectation. They don't have realistic expectations from each other. This is this humongous part of damage that a war does to humanity. It's not that there's just destroyed buildings and streets and people are killed, but there whoever is left, they're not the same. They damage, they hurt, and they may not know this, and they may not know how to deal with this. So then it triples and quadruples in the society through all these connections. I don't know what those Russians were thinking, but for me, this is like the children who living with sirens and in the middle of their playtime, they need to go to basement. What kind of mental health are we talking here about it? What kind of fears they're going to have as grown-ups? How are they going to...
attached are they going to be in the future when they're going through such an emotional...
We have no idea the magnitude. So that's the thing. And people who are in the occupied areas, I don't have much, but I know it's a very Soviet Union-like mentality. People around, they bring you your new Russian passport, and there is definitely a deficit of food, and there's definitely Russian media that portrays everything the way they need to be shown, and there is definitely not a freedom moving where you want to go, and people are not necessarily have resources. Once you like somebody,
horrifying. That's horrifying.
Yeah, it's horrifying, and it's reality of this. Even if you don't like it, what are you gonna do? You may not have enough income to just pack your car and go elsewhere. This, our lives is just one day long, and you just need to do things just to stay alive and keep your family running. And when stuff like this happens to you, it's not that you now don't have any other problems. Now you're totally going to focus on how to dismantle Putin's regime. No, you're not. You don't have time for this, really.
And you need to survive. And
exactly. So you just need to make sure you have the job, make sure you have food for every day, and that's how you survive it.
I know we're running out of time. If you can imagine how fast these interviews go, I just be doing this more than once, Sergey, for sure.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this, because I know what we're dealing with right now is Ukrainian fatigue, as you called it when we were talking about this before the show started. I don't have that. I feel angered when people have it at this stage, and we can't have fatigue on this. We have to be relentless. We've got to continue doing this and raising awareness of it. That's how you win the war of ideas. And Russian propaganda can only go so far. I believe that we could be the remedy to that. Looking at where you are right now and what coming up, how do you feel we could deal with what's been termed Ukrainian fatigue in American society and in Europe?
Great question. We need to talk about Ukraine, and I think we need to find a way to bring an emotional connection to that stuff, because all the propaganda, all the information that, let's say, goes through Russia, it's not appealing to people's rational, because it's not rational. Somehow it appeals to people's emotions, and they connect with that wherever attitude it is. So I think to make an antidote to that, we need to be able to find this beauty of Ukraine and that resilience of Ukrainian spirit and show it in everywhere we possibly can, and just show that those Ukrainians, they just like you and I'm Ukrainian, right? I'm Americanized though, right? But it's just, yeah, I really want people across the world find a way to personally connect with Ukraine and with its fight for everybody's values, essentially.
Well, I'll add this, because I think this is a perfect time for me to plug my idea with you. So I have an idea to the audience I want to share with you. We've already talked about this. I have an idea called Let's Share This Message. It'll be a grassroots campaign uniting podcasters, digital creators, and influencers, depending on its growth, to create and showcase Ukraine on each individual platform. So the idea is, the way you take a pebble and throw it into the pond and you have the ripple effect emanating out of it, I believe that we can create something similar, at least through the airwaves and podcasting and digital creation, that could help in our own way to increase awareness. It's like, what impact can we make grassroots ourselves? I believe the impact could be pretty great. And I'm excited to work with you on that. And more of that's going to come in the future. A perfect moment to talk about it was right now. And I'm, as you can tell my voice, I am excited about this, because a lot of times when things like this happen, we can feel powerless. We can feel like the power is taken away from us. The reality is, it's the opposite. The power lies within us. And if we're galvanized, we can change even perception. And that's what I want to do. I want to create support, and I want to change the perception of what people in the United States are thinking about Ukraine. This isn't something that's over there and we have nothing to do with. We're all interrelated, interconnected. And I believe that this is going to show that personally. And I want to thank you for coming on, because you took time out of your schedule with the courage and stuff that you're dealing with. I think together we can make a pretty sizable impact. I'm excited about us doing that together here from Tampa, but it's like a ripple effect. Let's throw the ripple in the pond and let's see how damn far it can go. And I want us to get others involved in this project and this idea. And we're going to share the message about Ukraine, share the message of what we can do right now to combat the negativity that's being spewed out by Putin and his regime. And we can try to unite like-minded people just through our own abilities. And I feel very strongly about that. Tell me your input on all this, because I know we've been talking about this for a while already.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate it, because I probably said it already, but I do want to say Ukraine needs help right now. It does. It's too big of a monster to deal with. And, you know, this kind of informational or spiritual help, anything helps to unite Ukraine against this invasion and clear Ukraine and rebuild Ukraine. There's going to be so many opportunities really right now to show that we actually standing behind our values, because again, we need help, guys. We need to feel that the world behind us also and holding us a little bit. But when the war is over, there's still going to be so many opportunities for beautiful part of humanity to bloom and rebuild Ukraine in a new way, in a fair way, in a way of human rights being valued and people living wealthy and happy, and they have time to think about their spiritual growth and enjoying all the dimensionalities of life.
You brought up Lord of the Rings earlier, and that was one of my favorite movies from many years ago. It's like going against Morgoth. Putin's like the Morgoth of this world, and we've got to take him on with his dark army. That's basically, it's light versus dark. And I tie it together with a reference, because from my vantage point, looking at everything and what we're going through right now, yes, it's some dark times we're living in, but you know what else counterbalances that? It's a good that comes from the dark. And I feel very positive we can create good from this. And I feel like we're already doing that just by putting this message out there already from this first episode. I want to thank you for coming on. If anyone from our audience wants to reach out to you or wants to find out more about this stuff, where would you recommend that our audience contacts you?
You can write to my email. It's sergbo@yahoo.com. Ukraine is a very ancient country, so we have Yahoo there.
No problem. No, I'll put that in the show notes too. I have a Yahoo account, but for now, if anyone listens, I always like to have the opportunity to introduce them to you directly because I really appreciate your specialty and your knowledge set and personal experience, and coming on here takes courage. And I just want to thank you for working with me on this idea.
Thank you so much. Very honored to be part of this. I mean it.
I just want to thank Sergey for coming on the show today. This is something I'm very passionate about, guys. If you're a podcaster, digital creator, or influencer, or anyone who has passion similar to what I'm talking about, wanting to support Ukraine and spreading the truth about this country and these people, it's an amazing place. Never been there, but I will tell you from talking to Sergey and talking to others in the past, we need to do whatever we can to support Ukraine. We need to do whatever we can to support its fight against Russian imperialism and aggression and Putin, and we will outlive Putin. And I want to take anyone in the audience who's here, listening to the United States, contact your representatives from the House of Representatives. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. Contact them. Let them know that you're really upset about the fact that Ukraine's not getting its funding it needs. And let your representative know how you feel. And you can look that up. I'll put the information in the show notes about how to find your representative from your district. If you're in Tampa, Kathy Castor is the democratically elected representative here in Tampa. I just highly recommend that you do that. The grassroots thing can work so far, and it could be powerful if we galvanize people to make a difference. So reach out to your elected representative. I'm going to make sure I get this out in a timely manner so that we can hopefully make a positive ripple effect there. And I also want everyone in the audience to really pay attention to this stuff, guys. When you hear stuff in the media, be responsive. And we do have numbers. We have power in numbers, and we're all similar like that. So think that and keep that in mind. Thank you so much for tuning into this stuff. We'll have more programming like this coming out. Stay positive when you're positive anything is possible. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Social Psychic Radio Show. Don't forget to join us for another episode next time. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give us a review on iTunes. You can also check us out on Facebook, and don't forget to visit the Social Psychic YouTube channel. Until next time, it's a big world out there. Keep an open mind, embrace your paradigms, and know that the universe is always yours to explore.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electrocast.
Are you a fan of classic cinema or a young person who wants to discover the best films of all time? Do these legendary movies still hold up?
On the Generation Film Podcast, two guys who grew up when movies dominated the culture share a great film with a panel of young movie lovers and see how it plays for today's generation.
We discuss changes in storytelling styles, representation,
the making of each film, its initial reception, and how its meaning has changed over the years.
Join us as we explore cinema classics across generations on Generation Film.
Electrocast. Electrocast.